You're listening to Three Kitchens Podcast, hosted by Aaron Walker and Heather Dyer.
We're friends trying out recipes in our own regular home kitchens. We hope our experiences will inspire you to get creative in the kitchen.
Hello, and welcome to Three Kitchens Podcast. We're your hosts. Over there is Aaron Walker.
Hello.
And my name is Heather Dyer. And today we are talking about vertical farming and growing microgreens in an urban farming operation.
Ooh.
Does that kind of sum it up?
I love that. That's it. Guillermo Borges and Andre Salazar are here to share their experience vertical farming indoors in Calgary, Alberta. So we hope you enjoy this interview and tune in to the second half.
We have some ideas for you for how to incorporate microgreens into your meals. It's not really cooking because just as it's called, it's a green. But there's lots of different ways you can incorporate it into the meals you already eat, and they're high in nutrients and really nutritious. So stick around for the end and we're going to have some ideas for you for eating these delicious greens.
Excellent. Let's get into it. Andre and Guillermo, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. We are really excited to have you here to talk and learn about vertical farming, because I think it's something we hear a lot about, but I know for Heather and myself, it's something that we'd like to understand more about. So can you kind of tell us what vertical farming is and how you would explain it to us?
Sure. So vertical farming basically allows us to grow vegetables indoors, which then allows us to grow vegetables all the time, year round. And how we're able to do this is through technology. So leverage, sensors and microcontrollers to kind of actuate things and keep things under control. That's where the efficiency comes from. And you can control the inputs and the outputs. This is very important here in Canada, because we only have basically a certain period of time where we can grow in summer in Alberta. And so, so vertical farming allowed us to just grow year round, and also it improves the crop yields as well as the quality as well.
Okay. When you talk about controlling the environment, are you growing in hydroponic systems or are you growing in soil?
So we're growing in a hydroponic system. That is a very efficient way to grow crops. You're saving a lot of water, and you're also able to control the nutrients a lot better.
Okay.
And just give the plants exactly what they need. So yes, we're growing it hydroponically instead of.
It's also cleaner because when you get soil, you're not really in control of what's in the soil. Whereas with a hydroponic system, you pretty much know all the inputs.
Okay, I have a question. How does a hydroponic system use less water?
It's because we recycle the water mainly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah, and the water is both the soil and the nutrients. So in a conventional way of growing, you got your soil and you got your nutrients and you got your water, and water becomes everything. It contains everything that you want, and then you just recycle it. And because it's a controlled environment, you also control the humidity and that kind of stuff.
I would imagine it would get very humid in the space that you're growing in from that.
Yeah. So right now we're not necessarily recycling the whole thing, but we do control it. And so, and also as well, we only water the roots, and that's super important. So we're being more efficient at providing the plants with the water where they need it. And so that prevents evaporation of the water. And yes, you can control, especially here in Calgary, it's pretty dry. So it's easier to control the humidity.
Okay, very cool. So how does that change what you're growing in terms of what you get from a plant that's grown in soil versus a plant that's grown in the hydroponic? Is it a better product that you're getting at the end? Or
short answer, yes.
Yeah.
It tends to be higher quality. The plants are less susceptible to things like variations in temperature, which do affect them. They're never wanting for anything. They're getting the same exact amount of water every single time, X amount of times a day. So you're really giving them the best chance of success is what it is.
Okay, so does that mean you can harvest faster just because you're providing everything it needs versus.
Yeah, they do grow a bit faster, yes.
Oh,
Th there is a hard limit, like there's only so many inputs you can add before the plants stop growing any faster. But yeah, that is a lot of what allows us to do what we do is if you were to grow, I don't know, basil, for example, which is one of our best-selling products right now, outdoors, it would likely take you longer and they would not look the same as ours do.
Yeah, I've noticed that myself. Purchasing your basil and versus what I've grown in my garden, it's like spongier. I don't know how to describe it, but it is a
Probably
much
less oily
different.
too. The leaves themselves, that's what
Oh,
makes it so
okay.
aromatic.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah, no, I found it really different than what I've grown just in my backyard.
Also in the store, you see like a potted basil plant.
Yeah.
It's in a pot and there's soil in it. And that's called living basil, but also what your product is also called living basil, for example, and it just has the root attached to it. I mean, I would think that there's major benefits to not having to, now you're not just selling the plant, you're selling the soil and the pot and the whole, like that sort of production seems like it would have a lot more overhead than what you're producing. Is that,
For sure. Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. But yeah, for example, our packages, they have 2 to 3 plants per package, which would be difficult to do if you were to buy 2 or 3 pots.
So is there actually a medium that the roots sit in other than water? Like I've heard of using coconut fibers or what kind of
She's gonna
substrate?
say
I don't know.
soil.
No,
I was gonna say
medium is
soil.
the right word. You
Medium, okay.
use the right word. And yeah, maybe Andre can talk a little bit more about this, but we do use a coconut base.
Yeah,
Okay,
so we have
cool.
our mixture of cocoa based medium, and that's literally just to hold the roots there. And also when we're germinating them, they need a bit of moisture, and so that's where the cocoa provides that moisture. But after that, really it's just to hold the roots.
Very cool. And so what kind of nutrients then do you use? Are they organic or synthetic?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we thought about that, and we wanted to do organic nutrients, but turns out they're very messy because they're organic. They come in with other compounds, not just the nutrient that the plant needs, but it's extra stuff. And these
Right.
things tend to break down and start decomposing because it's organic, and it just causes a lot of issues. And especially in food safety, that's an issue. So we decided to just keep it on the synthetic side, where you're just providing the nutrient that it needs, and that's it. And then you can keep the water more often. And in terms of food safety, it's a lot better.
Interesting, very cool.
So why microgreens?
Honestly, they were the easiest way for us to get going as we saw it. We don't see that being sort of our biggest product in the future, but they have a benefit, which is you can iterate on them really quickly. Their growth cycle is very short. From seed to package, you're looking at an average of like 12 days, which for us, when we were starting to test, meant we could iterate really quickly, try different things and find what worked. It was also something that is super nutrient dense. So from a health standpoint, they're, better than your traditional vegetables. I would say for me that those were the main two.
I would think they take up less space because they're micro, just by their name, they're
Yeah,
small plants, and so
you need less height for sure.
you don't need a ton of space to
Yes.
grow them like you would maybe a typical greenhouse operation where you have to grow things up. And speaking of that, how what size of operation are we talking about? Like what are we picturing here in terms of how much space you're growing in?
Not a ton. It's actually a smaller unit in a not so big warehouse right in the southeast of the city. That's the benefit of vertical farming. We go upwards of 14 feet. So you're really multiplying that the footprint of the machine. If you were to extrapolate every single level, it would take, I don't know, tens of thousands of feet probably.
Right.
But because we're able to go straight up, it really isn't a very big facility in terms of the footprint.
I think there's lots of benefits to that, like heating and like the
Yeah.
energy required to run a smaller operation, but you're producing
Well, the real estate alone is the benefit, right? I think that's where the real benefit comes from.
Pretty much every question you ask us about the specifics, you'll hear us talk about efficiency. And in this case, that's one of the biggest things because A lot of people that try vertical farming don't often understand the complexity and how long it's going to take for you to get your ROI, because it is difficult. It is sort of still a niche business, and it's hard to compete with somebody that's growing lettuce for free in California. So for us, getting to a space that was small and keeping our costs controlled is a big part of the efficiency equation.
Yeah, absolutely. I was kind of wondering, does the benefit of growing locally and reducing all your shipping costs, is that efficiency enough for offsetting that cost of maintaining that controlled environment and the real estate and the light and like what you're paying for that maybe somebody outside getting free light isn't getting? Like, how do those?
That is the challenge. That's the problem with vertical farming. That's why it hasn't taken off as everyone wants. Ideally, it's the perfect way to grow. I mean, but the reason it's economically is really tough to get it going.
Right.
So you got to figure it out your system and do a lot of testing. But yes, it is doable, but it's tough. It's not easy. There's lots of things that you got to be an expert on and be efficient. There's so many little details that you got to kind of focus on and make it very efficient. That's where the challenge is. And so that's what we've been trying to solve, the three of us, is trying to get that efficiency in every single step of the way. But yeah, we're there and we've been proving that all along. And, you know, when people like you says, one of the best bases you ever had was ours, you know, it's great to hear, because it took at least 2 years to get basil where somebody says, wow, it's really good. And, you know, I love the price. It took about 2 years. It was a lot of struggles, a lot of failures. And, you know, basil takes a lot longer than microgreens. So that even stretches the whole thing. So,
yeah, basil's never been easy to grow for me. So I don't know if that's just my amateur backyard gardening.
God, no. And just to add to Andre's response earlier, I think it also depends what you're selling. You know, a really high quality product that stood out that people would be willing to pay for. If I ask you what brand your lettuce is, you probably don't know. So having that recall and that higher quality product that people are willing to pay for, I think obviously facilitates this type of operation. And then there's also been a lot of just general awareness about supporting local. So I think there is a subsegment, at least here in Calgary or in Alberta generally, where we have experience, where people do value that higher quality local product and they're willing to pay a little bit more for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yeah, we hear that all the time. It's a challenge for any of us because the price of food continues to skyrocket, and you do have to decide where you're placing that value. Like, you know, if you want to support local and you want something fresh that's grown here, what's the trade-off maybe in some other area, right?
Right, like it's something that you have to decide. We often see, we're on the other side of why food is so expensive. So we've seen jumps in costs that are far beyond what, you know, you hear that inflation is 5%, 6%. We've had things that double, basically. So
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and I also want to point out that, for example, if you take a look at our microgreens, they still have the same price that they had since we started, you know, 3 years ago. And it's because of that
right.
The efficiency.
And then I'd say the last part of that is the buyers, a solid base of stores that service those communities that value quality, that value local, and tend to be health conscious and like to know that the stuff they're eating doesn't have pesticides or doesn't have manure runoff and those types of things that you can't really guarantee with what you buy at, I don't know, say a Walmart, for example.
Oh, absolutely. You've talked about all these efficiencies and all these great areas that you guys as a team have perfected or that you continue to improve on. Can you kind of give us a background of how you became urban farmers? It sounds like you're a diverse group of people that bring these skills to make this work.
That's a fair assessment. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a fair assessment. Definitely. We all have different skills. So for me, definitely I bring in the technical stuff and also the farms. I grew up in a small farm in Colombia.
Okay.
I do have a background on that. I know how important the climate is for agriculture, and I have a background in physics as well. So when I was in university, I was doing physics. You know, you start getting used to the whole idea of climate change, and so I thought, okay, what can I do? You know, where's the opportunity here? And so that's why I started Alpa. But I needed a hand in terms of like with the business stuff, with the sales stuff, you know, and that's where Guillermo came in as well. But I mean, there was other stuff too, like learning how to, you know, weld and do all this stuff that's like more physical. Zach, for example, he knew a little bit about welding and all the stuff. So we got together and we came up with like a prototype. Yeah. So the three of us, we all have a little bit of difference of background, and that comes together to make Alpha.
Yeah, it was kind of coincidence, to be honest. I don't think the three of us, when we started working at a retail job, thought that that's what would happen. That is where we met. And yeah, we sort of started talking about this idea and the viability, making it work. And then eventually it just came to a point where it was like, okay, well, why don't we do it? And here we are.
That's awesome.
Just shows you don't have to be a multi-generational farmer to start and learn and make it work, right?
It's like anything. I think if you have enough of a passion, there's an opportunity there, a little bit of luck, you're likely to be able to do things.
So is it just the three of you, or do you have other people who work in the facility or help with the plants?
Yeah, definitely. We do have more people involved in whether it is decision making as well as like helping us do just the physical stuff here at the farm. So yes, we are growing. So we do involve more people.
Setting up everything to pump and the lighting and the monitoring. Did you design that all yourselves then?
For the most part, we did, yes. It took a lot of testing, and man, we wasted a lot of resources trying to figure it out what the best design. But once we did, it really helped us a lot. Like we were able to grow a lot in a very small space. But it's all thanks to that, you know, ability to design it yourself and build it yourself.
Right. And you mentioned earlier that microgreens may not be the long game. You may have other ideas for growing other things. So if you decide to shift gears or try something new, you can adapt your hardware and your setup to suit that.
For sure. Yeah. The machine that grows the microgreens is the same one that grows the basil.
So it sounds like basil is the top seller at the moment, or one of the most popular. What do you see coming? What's coming? Like, what do you think is going to be like the big thing? We've been talking a lot lately about trends and in terms of food, and it seems to be this constantly shifting. We can't really keep up with it. I just wonder, what do you see as like the big thing coming?
I'm more interested in the things that will last. I think to build a sustainable long-term business, it's best to focus on things that people will always buy. So yeah, for us right now, it's basil. We want to get into some leafy greens, but we've also looked at herbs. For me, it's about having sort of that mind share and that lasting power by being the providers of stuff that people are always going to need or want. It may not be a strict necessity, things that people can come back to.
With basil, I feel like we weren't really chasing after a trend. And like lots of stores told us, don't even try. We already have a supplier, but we kept on working on it and improving it. And there was a lot of stuff that we have to do to get it to where it is right now. But then, yeah, all of a sudden it took off. People started appreciating the quality, the hard work that we put into it. And then it took off. But it wasn't because we were chasing a trend or, you know, anything like that, but because we focus on bringing in a good product. And we knew basil, you know, everybody knows basil, you know, just like everybody knows lettuce and all the stuff. It was a big gamble, but it worked out.
Is there a benefit to buying the living plant? Like, we see living lettuce and living basil, whereas in the past we've been just sold, you know, basil that's already been cut or trimmed, or lettuces that have been cut or trimmed. Is there a benefit to the consumer to buy the living item, or the one with the roots attached to it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because it's going to last you longer and it's going to be a bit fresher. And, you know, some of our customers will like repot the plant, basically put it in soil and it keeps growing.
Oh.
And so some people do that.
Even though it's not grown in soil, it can still go back to soil?
So it definitely can, but you can't do the opposite. You can't go from soil to hydroponics.
Okay.
But you can go from hydroponics to soil.
Uh-huh.
And it works out pretty good.
Cool.
Yeah. Like, for example, when we were starting out to test out our basil, one of the things we did was we took a fully grown plant and just put it in literally just a cup of tap water. And we were able to keep it going for like an extra week. You can definitely extend the shelf life of the product and keep it fresh, or it'll even grow a little bit.
So is that the best way that you recommend people to store it when they get it home?
I think it depends what you want to do with it. For most people, it's easiest probably to just leave it in the packaging. We get about 2 weeks, depending on when you buy it. Our intention is that you get roughly 2 weeks from when it's on the shelves at the store you get it at. The truth is, you'll probably consume it in that time.
Easily, for sure.
But say you didn't, hypothetically, that would definitely help.
Okay.
Okay. So can you tell us about the charitable aspect of your business model? It seems
Sure.
like a really great story there, and I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So when we started, one of the things we talked about was, okay, if we're going to add a brand component to this, if we're going to make produce that people can get behind, what would help us do that? So we looked to what we thought were some of the best brands out there, companies that are sort of going above and beyond what, in theory, a company should do. So that's kind of the reasoning for it. We wanted something that people could align with on a personal aspect. So for example, right now we donate on average 30, 40 pounds on a good week of produce, often as fresh as it can be, literally harvested same day, to the food bank here in Calgary. We've partnered with animal shelters. We've planted trees. Yeah, we used to let people choose the charities we donated to. I think the people that cared, they loved it. They were like, this is such a cool idea. But unfortunately, it didn't scale. So we settled on, okay, what can we have the biggest impact on? And it was food insecurity, of course. One of the downsides of growing something like a microgreen, for example, is that the shelf life is short. Mm-hmm. So whatever you don't use, you lose, basically. That's, I would say, one of the reasons we started it. It also helps us give back to a community that's really supported us locally. Truth is, we wouldn't be here if many people hadn't taken chances on us. There's also an aspect of being appreciative and recognizing that if it weren't for many people taking an interest, we would not be where we are today.
That's very cool. I like that story.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing all your stories and educating all of our listeners. You know, we've got lots of local people that tune in and go seek you guys out. Can you give us and our listeners a rundown of where we can find you?
Sure. If you're in Edmonton, you can find us at Sonterra Ledrum. In Red Deer, we're at Sonterra as well. We're looking at expanding into a couple other stores in Edmonton. But in Calgary is where we have the bulk. So basically every Sonterra, every Lena's, except for the one in the north. We're at the Italian Center. We're at Crisp Apple. We are at Chongo's Market. We are at Cherry Pit in the Calgary Farmers Markets. We're at Tomato Man and Gull Valley Growers at the Farmers Markets as well. And I believe that's it. Andre, am I missing anything?
Yeah, those are the main stores. Yeah, definitely give us a go. I mean, eventually we're going to be coming up with more products.
Mm-hmm.
More stuff is coming.
Oh, I did forget one store. Not really a store, but if you want to try our basil, Noble Pie has, they use our basil. You can get it fresh on pizza.
Ooh.
It's really, really good stuff. I will say though, if you haven't been there and you're going, get on the wait list and plan to be there for some time because they are very busy.
Good tip. And we will link to your website and your social media in our show notes. So listener, you can just scroll down and go directly over there and check them out. This has been a lot of fun and I learned a lot of stuff. Honestly, vertical farming to me just sounds like it could be a vine growing to the sky. So I now feel much more informed and I know a lot more about all of it. So thank you so much. Really appreciate your time and all of your expertise.
Yeah. No, thank you for having us, guys. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, listener, we are just blown away by the kindness and generosity of our guests on the podcast. They lend us their time and share their knowledge with all of us so we can learn and be better cooks and bakers at home.
If you enjoy our guest episodes, please see their links in the show notes. Go follow and support them if you can. And if you have an idea for a guest, please send us a message. We'd love to hear it. Now, let's get back to the episode. Welcome back, Aaron. I know you wanted to know more and more. You were so nerding out over the vertical farms, but it's interesting, I think, to hear what goes into it.
I'm just fascinated how efficient the process can be so that even though they're paying for light, where a typical farmer would not be paying for light because you're outside in the sunshine, mm-hmm. how all the efficiencies in how it's delivered to us and how they grow their products in the hydroponic system reduces the waste and the cost of all the waste and the shipping in a great enough way that it makes it viable to pay for light and space for this. So it fascinates me endlessly.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. We're here for it. We're going to the stores. We're buying delicious microgreens grown by Elpa, or depending where you are, maybe it's another grower in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do with these adorable little teeny tiny plants?
I would say it's a much more delicious way to put greens into your everyday diet. It's not something that you have to be like, oh, it's this new product. I have no idea how to use.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just substituting it in where you would use lettuce or
like salad greens, I guess.
Salad green. Yeah. And it just, I don't know, the flavor in there. Mm.
Oh, I think they're more flavorful. Certainly yeah. More flavorful yeah. than lettuce.
Mm. Yeah.
I have nothing against lettuce. I eat lots of it, but this has far more flavor, especially if you're just tossing, like last night we had roast chicken and rice. And I just put a handful of microgreens on everybody's plate, threw some cucumbers in there, put some vinaigrette on it. It's easy and it's so flavorful and high in nutrients.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I made a stir fry last night with beef and bok choy stir fry that was supposed to have coriander on it. So, you know, that was out. But then popping on these microgreens and again, that sauce, the vinaigrette, you mix it all together. It just added this pop of fresh flavor in there that was delightful.
Mm-hmm. I got to have some for lunch today and it was really yummy. I'll be making that one for sure. I think it's just so easy. It makes it like a no-brainer to put some greens onto whether it's an omelet. My husband and I had toast this morning, like avocado toast.
Ooh,
and
pan
con tomate with microgreens. We just piled it on top. So tasty. It just adds an extra something to whatever you're eating, really.
Absolutely. And the nice thing is that you can wash them up fresh when you get them home from the store. The containers that they come in, just pop them back in there and they'll be in your fridge. So anytime you want it, you just grab your handful and pop it on in whatever sandwich you're making. It's really easy to cook with because I find sometimes I will get lazy if it's a lettuce and I like look at that bag in the fridge and I'm like, okay, so then I have to open it and I got to wash it up and then I got to dry it all off and I got to chop it up. I mean, this is just grab and go. It's no-brainer.
Yeah. Pile it on a burger, put it on your tacos.
We're having burgers tonight.
Nice. And the basil was how it all began because you came across Elpa's living basil plant at the store and you made pesto and then you texted me and said, I just ate the most delicious basil I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
And then you bought some for me.
Yep.
Which is really nice. And I tried it. I think we both made pesto out of that basil because I had to try it after you made pesto. I was like, okay, so just, I don't even know how to explain it. Extreme basil flavor. Like if you want like the most basil-y of basil you can get, this is it.
One thing I notice when I'm growing my own vegetables in the garden is when I grow my own spinach, when I chop it up and cook with it, it turns everything green. So like if I make a quiche with my quiche is now like this light green color because it's got so much of that chlorophyll, so much of that green in it. And it's the same with this basil. And I've never had basil that did this, but I made a pesto and quickly whipped it up with some gnocchis and everything turned green, bright, brilliant green. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing because it's so rich and so dense and
spongy almost, right?
Yeah,
delicious.
I think they're really passionate about what they do and they spend a lot of time doing their research and developing the best for their plants, and it comes through in their product because it is so damn tasty.
Absolutely.
One last thing that I made,
oh right,
because I was just eating it, was egg salad sandwich. And so they've got radish greens that are, they have so much kick to them. Like they're so tasty. The kids were like, oh, these are kind of spicy. And I was like, these are fantastic.
Yeah. My kids didn't love those ones either, but they're my favorite.
Yeah. And I thought, what would be really good with that like
spicy,
fresh flavor? And I thought egg salad. So I make my egg salad with a diced up radish in it to give it the crunch rather than celery. And I thought, oh my gosh, radish crunch plus radish greens. I had an epiphany. And so I made this up, and holy man, if you're an egg salad fan, you have to go for that. So I'm gonna put that recipe as well as the beef and bok choy stir fry up on the blog for everybody. And if you go to Alpa's website, they also have just great general suggestions of where to use these microgreens.
Exactly. And that is at alpaverticalfarms.ca. The link will be in our show notes.
Yeah.
And if you're not in this area, then go source who's growing microgreens in your neighborhood, because the flavor is just, you're gonna find it so much better.
It's really worth it.
And now for the fine print. Links to recipes and other things we talked about in this episode can be found on the show notes or our website, www.threekitchenspodcast.com. Come say hello on Instagram, Facebook, Threads, YouTube, and TikTok. We'd love to connect. And if you enjoy the show, pass it on. Word of mouth is the number one way people learn about new podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Sounds like we have a lunch date to hit, Heather.
Try it.
Yes, absolutely.
Mike, we sent you.